The good news comes to us this morning from the Gospel of Matthew. As I mentioned to the children, a story of wilderness and temptation. Hard story, but an instructive one. So I invite you to listen for God's living word to you in these words and in what follows. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. The tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But he answered, "It is written, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone." Jesus said to him, "Again, it is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said to him, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only." Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him. The word of God for the people of God. Off we go into the wild blue yonder. It's a phrase that has worked its way into the American psyche. I'd bet every person here has heard it before. Most of us also know the tune that accompanies those words, even if we don't know the rest of the song or the title of the song. For the record, the title is, wait for it, the U.S. Air Force. What it lacks in imagination, it makes up for in specificity. Off we go into the wild blue yonder, climbing high into the sun. I say this because that first phrase, off we go into the wild, could almost serve as our theme or our motto for today and for the next five Sundays. That is to say, for Lent. Just need to add four little letters, N-E-S-S. For the last several years, we've framed the Sundays of Lent around a specific theme. It's always fun to do, sometimes challenging to do. And I think it's been a fruitful experience and exercise for us and opened us up to new ways of thinking about the season and the meaning and the practice or the observance of Lent. Whatever theme we pick, this story of Jesus heading out into the wilderness to face down his tempter traditionally launches us into the Lenten season, and not just us. This is true worldwide. This is the text that starts the season of Lent. This year, as I was thinking about the question of a possible theme, I read this passage, and one particular phrase just leapt off the page and captured my attention. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness. I realized that was it. That was our theme. So for today and for the next five Sundays, we're simply going to follow the Spirit as it leads us through these Lenten texts and through this Lenten season. So off we go, not into the wild blue yonder, but into the wilderness. Which is why what happened next is a tiny bit ironic. I noticed that for all the attention given to Jesus' time in the wilderness, for all its fame as a story, we know almost nothing about his experience there. We do know that it lasted 40 days and that he fasted the whole time. As Lizzie helped us understand, he probably did drink water. He almost certainly did. But apart from that, we know nothing about what his experience was like, how he spent his time, what he thought about, where he slept, did he get cold, did he get rained on. In most cases, these kinds of concrete details help capture the reader's attention. They bring you into the story. But we're given none of those specifics. As intriguing as it may be, Jesus' wilderness experience is just simply not the focus of this story. Temptation is the focus. But not your generic garden variety temptation, not like adding a second or even a third scoop of ice cream on your fresh hot piece of apple pie, or parking in a handicapped spot when it's raining and the lot's full and you're going to only be in long enough to buy a dozen eggs. Not like that. Not that kind of temptation. This kind is altogether different. It's the temptation to aim too low, to be less than you can be. And I say you, not him, because in the end, I believe this isn't just a story about Jesus, though it is obviously that. And it's not just theoretical, because temptation of this kind, to aim too low, to be less than we can be, it's a universal human experience. It comes to all of us at some point in our life when we're hungry, starved for attention or validation or love, when we're seduced by the idol of power or the need for recognition, even adulation. These things don't just happen to Jesus. We all face these temptations or variations of them at some point in our life. In this case, in this story, the tempter knows Jesus is hungry, so he hits him right where it counts, hits him right in the belly, right where it hurts. If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become bread, become loaves of bread. Feed yourself, in other words. Narrow your focus to just you, because then you'll be less than you can be, and you'll miss your calling to feed the multitudes. A second temptation, different specifics, same logic. If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for the angels will save you. Save yourself. Narrow your focus just to you, because then you'll be less than you can be, and you'll miss your calling to save the world. And finally, a third. All these countries I will give you if you fall down and worship me. Focus on yourself. Narrow it to just you. Because then you'll be less than you can be, and you will miss your calling to show the world that incarnate love reigns supreme over power. Now, clearly, even those of us here today who might overfunction just a tiny bit, and we are legion, we know we're not Jesus. And despite sometimes conveying this impression, we know we're not called to save the world. But here's another key point. We're not Peter, James, or John either. They had their own callings to fulfill, their own temptations to face. We have ours. The specifics are going to be different for each one of us, but there's a good chance the logic of these temptations will be the same for us as they were for Jesus. Focus just on you. Focus on your hunger, your need to be seen, or maybe for you, on your need not to be seen, to be invisible. Focus on your anger at what's happening in the world, not on the people whose lives are affected by it. Or focus on the experience you had in high school, that thing that wounded you so deeply and that continues to shape your adult life. Hang on to your anger and your shame about that and never let it go. Whatever it may be, whatever your temptation may be, the tempter would have all of us keep the focus strictly on yourself, because then you'll be less than you can be. You'll miss your opportunity to fully engage your gifts in this sacred calling given to all of us to spread faith, hope, love, joy, light throughout our corner of the world. Let me show you what I mean by that. Valerie Kuar had every right to be angry, and no one would have blamed her for succumbing to the temptation to keep her energies focused right there on her personal, completely justified sense of outrage and indignation. The roots of Valerie's anger actually go back more than 100 years, 103 to be exact, when her grandfather, Kehar Singh, arrived in this country. A practitioner of the Sikh faith, Mr. Singh fled the grinding poverty and the caste distinctions of his home country of India to come here to the United States in search of a better life. It's a story familiar to most of us in some way. After sailing all the way across the Pacific, he disembarked from the ship that carried him and was promptly put in jail. His crime? He just looked too different. With his brown skin and his ample beard and his prominent turban, Mr. Singh couldn't do anything about the color of his skin, but his beard and his turban were signs of a deep devotion to his faith, his Sikh faith, which is in turn devoted to love and oneness. Those are the founding pillars of the Sikh religion, love and oneness. But taken together, all of these exotic features were just too much for the official who met him when he got off the ship. They were just too different, too foreign. Mr. Singh looked like less like a gentle practitioner of a beautiful faith and more like a threat. And so the official promptly threw this new arrival in jail. Finally, on Christmas Eve, and through the intervention of an American-born, a white attorney, Valerie's grandfather's case was heard and he was released. He migrated to Central California, where he bought a parcel of land and turned to farming. He was also now free to practice his Sikh faith. Then the world shifted. World War II broke out, and in one of the darkest chapters in American history, Mr. Singh's Japanese-American neighbors were rounded up and sent to an internment camp somewhere out in the desert. Mr. Singh, without anyone asking him to do this, Mr. Singh took it upon himself to look after their farm, and he visited them at that camp when no one else would. As fear of the other rose in this country, he refused to stand down. Now, granted, neither Mr. Singh nor his neighbors were white or Christian, but it's like a textbook story of what American brotherhood looks like, American community, if you will. I care for you just because you're my neighbor. It's what we do. It's how we roll. It's also like a story, frankly, right out of the Gospels, but a Samaritan, that is, a foreign man who looks different, a Samaritan came near the wounded man, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. This is a par excellence exemplar of what love looks like according to Jesus. But then, years later, after this incident, many years later, the world shifted again. On September 11th, terrorists attacked New York City, among other places. In the explosion of fear and violence that followed, a man that Valerie called Uncle, another Sikh with an ample beard, prominent turban, he was murdered because he looked too different, too foreign, less like a practitioner of a religion, beautiful religion, devoted to love and oneness, and more like a terrorist. Valerie stood up to the hate and the fear. She became a lawyer, like the man who first came to her grandfather's aid 100 years earlier. Now, some Americans went to war, volunteered to go to war after 9/11 in the hope of protecting us from terrorism. I understand and respect that choice. For her part, Valerie became part of a generation of activists who worked to protect innocent people here at home from violence and from deportations based on the color of their skin and not the content of their character. She devoted her career to making her homeland safer for everyone, especially perhaps for people who looked like her grandfather and her uncle. And then the world shifted again. Several years ago, her son was born. On Christmas Eve of this year, that's the same night her grandfather was released from a jail cell more than a century earlier, she put out milk and cookies for Santa. After her son went to bed, there's just no other way to say this, after her son went to bed, she gave in to temptation. She ate the cookies and she drank the milk. But she did so for good reason. She wanted her son to wake up to a world that he believed was magical and filled with wonder. But even as the Christmas holiday came and went, the world was changing yet again. School-aged children, white children, began yelling at other children with brown skin to go back where they came from. Mosques and synagogues were being torched and threatened with bomb scares. There was one here in Asheville just last week at the Jewish Community Center. The magic was rapidly draining out of the world, and Valerie was suddenly afraid for her son's safety. Not that he'd be deported or thrown in jail for looking too foreign. He was an American citizen, after all. But because his skin is brown, she knew he was now at risk for being targeted and bullied and taunted and spit upon and told to go back where he came from. So she began to fear that if he followed in the tradition of her people, if her son did grow a beard and don a turban, he might someday be targeted as a terrorist like her uncle was. Now, if you think this sounds melodramatic, I literally have news for you. According to the Washington Post, on Friday, 2 days ago, a 39-year-old Sikh man from the Seattle area was working on his car in his driveway outside of his home when a man wearing a mask and brandishing a gun approached him and yelled, "Go back to your own country," and shot him. Fortunately, the wound was not fatal. Hit him in his arm, the bullet, and he will recover. But you can understand why Valerie might be angry, and how easy it would be to give in to the temptation to nurse that anger, to feed it like some kind of inner dragon until it grew strong and powerful. And why, when she got the invitation to speak at an interfaith service in response to events just like this one, she might have said something she regretted. The service was being recorded, and this was her chance to let the world know exactly how she felt about all this. But instead of offering an angry, hate-filled rant that would have instantly gone viral and incited yet more anger and hate in response, she faced that temptation down. Yes, it feels like the world is changing and that despite her best efforts, her beloved homeland is becoming darker and scarier and less welcoming. But channeling her experience as a mother, she asked the assembled congregation instead, "What if this darkness she feels, this darkness we all feel, what if it's not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb? What if all the people of faith and conscience in this country, and we are millions and millions strong, what if all of us together, not just the women, but men too, what if we all begin to, what do you do when you give birth? What if we all begin to breathe and push to engage in this labor together so that something wonderful might be born out of the pain we're all experiencing?" So that's what happened when Valerie stood up to her temptation, to the temptation, her temptation to aim too low, to be less than she can be, to give in to the shadow inside of her rather than to give rise to the light that we're all called to embody. The hard news, friends, the hard news is that at some point, every one of us in here today will face some version of this temptation to be too small, to give up on who we're called to be, and to give in to the temptation to be something other than that and less than that. The good news is that as we make our way through the wilderness, we don't have to be and face down these temptations. We don't have to be Jesus or even Valerie to face these temptations down and to spread faith, hope, love, joy, and light in our corner of the world. We just have to be ourselves and to remember that God is with us and for us every step of the way.